Hi, I'm Jen.
I'm Sybil.
And I'm Sophia.
And you're listening to Every Rom-Com, the podcast where we have fun taking romantic comedies seriously.
This week on Every Rom-Com, we're continuing our self-help series with a blind date in London.
We'll talk about mantras, resolutions, and efforts to change for the better.
And we'll discuss the careers of Lake Bell, Simon Pegg, and screenwriter Tess Morris as we talk about the 2015 romantic comedy, Man Up. Hello, Sophia, and hello, Sybil.
Hello, hello. How are you both?
I'm great. I feel like this is actually the first time you two have been on the same show since the anniversary episode, like a year ago.
Yeah, I think it's been a while.
It's such a funny thing because for me, you guys are like my go-to people that I'm like hanging out with on the podcast most of the time, but yet you're just dodging each other all the time. So I don't know. You either like different movies or you're on different schedules, but I'm glad to have you together again.
Thank you. I think it's different schedules because it's always a good time with you, Sybil. Cheers.
I know. We always have a great time. I know.
I agree.
So we're continuing our self-help series and we've already talked to Sybil about this issue. And we came up with like, you're not super big into self-help, but you did give us a recipe for mac and cheese, which we shared on the Yes Man episode. And so, Sophia, like, I want to know from you, like, how do you feel about the self-help genre? Do you read any books or participate in any programs? Is it something you like? Or
yes, 100%. I've been into this shit for years. I've got them all. I follow them all. I listen to them all. I've got all the books. Yeah.
Yes. You are the woman this series has been waiting for then, clearly.
And
like,
yet,
you and me.
I'm also a little like barfed out by it too.
Really?
Like,
okay.
There's some that I'm like, oh, that's just wishy-washy hoo-ha over there. And then I'm like, oh, this one over here. And I have to say, for the most part, they all kind of say the same thing, just a little differently.
Okay. So like when you say that, there's so many different kinds of self-help books though. There's like ones that are like more about relationships. There's ones about like improving your emotional life. There's ones about like improving your financial life or organization. Like what kind do you gravitate towards, or is it just sort of a general thing, or do you have any favorites you could call out for the listeners?
Oh, favorites. Well, I'll give you authors. Love Brené, love Glennon. I've gotten into Mel Robbins recently. I follow James Clear of Atomic Habits. That's a hot one right now. I think I gravitate more towards the ones that are like, you know, about changing your mind, you know?
That's really interesting. I like that. I like that idea of like that you go into the, like you go into the book or the go into the idea and helps you like change your mindset by the time you get out. Right.
That's the idea.
Yeah. Okay.
And anybody that I can glean a little like to become a mantra, you know, what's resonating with me right now? What's going to be the, you know, those mantras and self-talk things that are going to, you know, give me a buzz right now.
So is there one book that is like kind of motivating you right at this moment?
No. I think that's why I've got like 12 of them on my desk right now.
I
read like bits and parts. I don't even think I read any of them all the way through. Cause I'm here, practice and write down this and that. So I'm like stuck on chapter one. I'm like, I got to think about that now. And then I get distracted and
I do the same thing. Like, and I work at a library, so I'm taking them home all the time cause they come through and I'm like, oh, this one. And like, there was this one called Change Your Life in 7 Days. And I was making really good progress on it. And I got to like day three. And then I like got stuck cause it was like too much I had to do in that one day. So I actually ordered it though from Amazon now because I'm like, it actually was really helpful, but I just have to define a 7-day period where that is the one book I'm going to focus on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. So I think there's a lot of value in choosing one and then just focusing on it and working through the hard parts of the book. Like, it took me like 3 or 4 tries, but I finally did the whole artist's way, and it was so great to finally get to the end of that.
Yes, I would say that's one that I go back to periodically. And each time it's like, I just get such a, aha, you know, it every time. That one I would call magic for me for like the past 20 years.
Yeah, definitely. It's the reason I probably ended up directing Shakespeare. It's the reason I ended up finishing my bachelor's degree when I didn't have a lot of hope for myself at that time. And so, yeah, it's caused some major revolutions in my life. So self-help.
So after our last podcast, I sat down and I thought about, like, I'm like, you know, I don't really read that many self-help books, but like, I kind of thought about what I do for self-help stuff. And I realized that I collect like self-help decks of cards, which I didn't really think about as self-help, but I have like decks of cards where it's like 31 days of gratitude, or 30 days of getting stuff done, 30 days of like, you know, finding ways to love yourself, stuff like that. And I'm like, well, technically these are self-help, right?
Yeah, 100% that's self-help.
So I collect self-help decks of cards.
There you go.
I love it.
So that's how I like to do self-help, because I'm very much like a, like, pull out this, like, some people maybe they would do calendars or something, but I love decks of cards. I like the physicalness of pulling out something every day and being like, this is what I'm doing today.
Love it. Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah. And then you don't get like bogged down in the middle of the book.
I think that that's what it is. Like, I need something very concrete and tactile, and I don't have to read anything, and it's not a plan.
Yeah. I really am wanting to dig into my books, though, just talking about them. It's terrible. So yeah, we got to finish the episode so I can go start reading them.
So before we get started today, a few notes. First, as usual, there will be a spoiler-free section at the beginning of the episode, and we will warn you when the spoilers are about to start.
We'd also like to remind you that you can follow the podcast on social media. Our Facebook page is Every Romcom Podcast and Blog. Our Instagram is at Every Romcom, and our Twitter handle is at Every Romcom Pod.
And as always, you can find the podcast at everyromcom.com. Send us feedback at feedback@everyromcom.com. And if you like what you hear, please rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, let's listen to part of the trailer for Man Up.
You can do this.
Hi, I'm Nancy.
This year, you're going to put yourself out there.
Take chances.
Be more deviant.
Engage with life.
Hey, oh my God.
You should really think about reading this.
I would lend you my copy, but I need it for my date. It's how we're going to recognize each other.
Oh, it's a setup.
It may always work.
I do think you should read it. It was an international bestseller.
So is the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, another excellent book.
Not an excellent book.
Blimey, I'm not that late, am I?
What are we doing in terms of saying hello?
Let's just go in. Oh, too soon for that. Nope.
Mwah. Hello there.
So, book.
Check.
And blind date.
Check.
What are you waiting for?
I am waiting for you.
Good. So, you're a triathlete?
Mm-hmm. Just got to regularly carb up.
Yeah, I definitely want kids. I'm not, like, freaking out about it yet.
Why would you? You're 24. I'm having a really good time.
I'm gonna go get a drink.
Nancy?
Yeah?
It's Nancy Preston. Who's Nancy?
I've got a confession to make.
I'm not really your blind date, Jack.
What? Are you even 24?
Oh, add another 10.
I was just merely trying to meet my mates in the modern
when
world.
When were you thinking of actually telling me about this bizarre decision?
I mean, I think people have done worse things in the world, but...
I'm racking my brains.
Man Up came out in 2015. It's directed by Ben Palmer and written by Tess Morris, and it stars Lake Bell and Simon Pegg.
The basic premise is that Nancy, a 34-year-old single woman, has been having a difficult time meeting people to date. On the train on her way to her parents' anniversary party, Nancy encounters a young woman who tries to get her to read a self-help book, 6 Billion People and You. When the train stops in London, Nancy wakes up to find that the woman has left the book with her. This same self-help book was supposed to identify the young woman to her blind date, Jack. Nancy ends up holding the book at the train station in the meeting place for the date so that Jack thinks that she's his date. When Jack charms her with his similar sense of humor, Nancy decides to go on the other woman's blind date, and hijinks ensue.
So, some interesting facts about the movie. So, first of all, the idea for the screenplay came out of screenwriter Tess Morris's own life. She told The Guardian, quote, "I had the idea because it actually happened to me. I was under the clock at Waterloo, and a guy came over to me and said, 'Are you Claire?' And I said, 'No.' And then he walked away. And I was single, and I thought, he was quite nice. I should have said yes." So she just thought about what would have happened in that event. And Morris had also been reading a lot of self-help books around the time she wrote Man Up. So she created a fake self-help book, 6 Billion People and You, which serves as an important prop in the movie. And actually, the funny thing about this is I checked to see if it was a real book when I was like researching it. And there's a Goodreads profile for it, even though it's not a real book. And a bunch of people have it listed as they want to read it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And talking about Man Up, she told Scott Myers of the website Go Into the Story that, quote, "I hope that it's almost a love letter to self-help books." And she said, "I read Eat, Pray, Love, and I loved Eat, Pray, Love, because I read it at a certain time in my life when I needed it. I ate, I prayed, I loved." So, little callback to the last episode that you will have heard on every rom-com, Eat, Pray, Love. Very good.
Love it.
And also, I'm going to mention that I'm going to be quoting a lot of information on this episode from the website Go Into the Story from Scott Myers. It's a really cool website where he interviews a lot of screenwriters. So I really recommend it if you're interested in film or screenwriting. And then Morris told The Guardian also that she wrote Man Up with a central axiom that kind of grounded the movie. And that was, at what point do you take a chance on someone? And is it worth the risk? And she was like kind of saying that it's important that a rom-com have some kind of central question that it's trying to answer or exploring during the movie. And I think that's kind of a good notion. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not just like wacky trope after wacky trope, but there's like a theme kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then let's see, when Simon Pegg got involved in the film, he gave notes on the script and they ended up beefing up Jack's character. So instead of focusing mainly on Nancy, it became kind of about both of them. And then during the shooting, Simon Pegg and Lake Bell also improvised in a lot of their scenes. So I'm not exactly sure which ones, but I think you can tell that there's kind of a nice loose comedic energy between the two of them. And Lake Bell is an American and developed a British accent for the movie. And it's funny because I think this is the first movie I really noticed her in. So I was surprised when she wasn't British. I don't know. It freaked me out when I heard her speak in her American accent.
I mean, I knew she was American, and so I kind of was like obsessed with hearing her dialogue, and I thought it was pretty darn flawless. I mean, I'm no pro, but I think she did really well.
And also, I guess it was kind of a dream of Lake Bell's to be able to perform with the British accent, because she's a little bit of a voice work and dialect nerd, apparently. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. That's one of her things. So it was kind of like a dream come true for her. She worked with a coach 2 months ahead of the shoot. And then she spoke in the British accent like the whole time she was doing the movie, even during her off hours. So a lot of commitment there. And then apparently she was also pregnant while shooting the movie. I feel like it must have been early in her pregnancy.
She was very, very thin.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I'm really curious to hear. So lately I feel like with Yes Man, like I was like, oh, everyone will love this movie. It'll be great. And not everyone loved the movie. And like, I'm the same way about Man Up. I really love this movie, but now I'm like dying to hear if I'm going to be the only one riding for the movie again. So tell me guys, I'm going first this time. I'll go my experience with the movie. So I saw Man Up like the first time I used somebody's smart TV to watch Netflix in 2016. I'd been living in Korea, so we didn't have the smart TV. We just like, I don't know, downloaded illegally stuff from the internet or watched Korean television. And so I was in Erin Yose's house, actually, I remember. And she had to go to work and she kind of left me there when I was chilling and waiting for her to come home. And I was looking around Netflix and I'm like, oh, it's a rom-com. It's got Simon Pegg in it. I'll check it out. And like, I just like fell in love with the movie like then. And like, I've seen it like probably 12 times since 2016 even. It's one of those ones I just put on in the background as a like kind of a go-to kind of cheer me up kind of movie. So that's my relationship with the movie. Now, go ahead. If you need to rain on my parade, I understand. What is your experience with the movie? What do you think of it?
My friend Jennifer told me to watch it because she was doing a podcast about it. And I liked it a lot. I mean, I've always thought that Simon Pegg probably would be very good in a rom-com, considering, like, I think that he can do romantic comedy pretty well. He does bro comedy really well, with romantic bro comedy kind of, like romance. And I thought this one was really well done. I enjoyed it. I wish that it had had a little bit more space for him. And now that you were like, he even like rewrote some of his stuff, I'm glad, because I wish that he had had more space. And I think it could have been even better for him.
Okay. I like the amount of Simon Pegg there was. I felt like it was pretty evenly balanced, but I get like, you would have liked to see more of his backstory, because we do see his ex-wife.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen a little bit more of his backstory. Okay. And I think that there was room for it.
Well, I'm glad you liked it, because Yes Man didn't go as well.
No, it did not.
I liked it too.
It's a three-person like. And like, had you just seen it for the podcast?
Yes, I have just seen it for the podcast. And I have to confess, like, the beginning had me tense until the turning point. And I was like, okay. Like, I get so, you know, I was invested, because I was all like nervous about
subterfuge.
Yeah. But I liked it.
Cool. Well, this is good. Yeah. All right. Everybody likes it. I'm so happy. Although Lee kind of likes it when we argue about stuff too, though. Any more you want to say about general opinion, or should we just keep it for as we
go?
Well,
I don't want to ruin anything, so I don't want to be a ruiner.
Okay. We'll keep it through as we go then. Okay. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the cast and crew, and I'm going to cover Lake Bell. And Lake Bell is the star, the female star of the movie. She's an actress, writer, and a producer. She grew up in New York City, and it sounds like her family was kind of well off, like given her parents jobs, and she went to a lot of private schools. And then during university, like relevant to this movie, she transferred to the Rose Bruford College in London to study acting. So before this movie, she'd had some experience actually living in London. And that's part of why it was a dream for her to, you know, come and do this English accent and do a job in Britain. So yeah. Her first IMDb credits are in 2002 for episodes of ER and a movie called Speakeasy. And then her other early work included recurring roles on the TV shows Miss Match, Surface, and Boston Legal, and the movies Over Her Dead Body, Under Still Waters, What Happens in Vegas, and It's Complicated. In the 2010s, Bell also had roles in Burning Palms, No Strings Attached, A Good Old-Fashioned Orgy, the TV series How to Make It in America, and the thriller Black Rock. Bell then started transitioning into writing and directing. In 2011 and 2012, she wrote and directed two short films, and she began directing episodes of the TV series Children's Hospital in 2012, and she also acted in that series. And then in 2013, Bell wrote, directed, and starred in her first feature film called In a World. And this is a really like good movie. I rewatched it preparing for the podcast, and I'll talk about it in the double feature recommendations a little bit. But it's about a woman trying to break into the world of voice acting, and I super recommend it.
So this is the first thing I remember seeing her in. I watched this when it came out. I saw it in theaters, and it was fantastic.
Nice. Yeah. And this was pretty critically acclaimed. She got a lot of notice for it. And so like it led to her, I think, probably getting noticed more for roles too. So in 2015, she appeared in Man Up, of course, what we're covering today, and the TV series Wet Hot American Summer First Day of Camp. And then she reprised the Wet Hot American Summer role in Wet Hot American Summer 10 years later. So yeah, she's funny in that. And then in 2016, she was a voice actor as Chloe in The Secret Life of Pets. And she played the same character in the sequel to that as well. I haven't watched a lot of these.
Oh, it's good.
Oh, yeah?
Secret Life of Pets. And Chloe is fantastic. So
okay.
Credit to Lake Bell.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And then in the 2010s, Bell also did voice acting in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the TV series BoJack Horseman, the TV series What If?, and she's probably most well known for the TV series Harley Quinn, where she voices Poison Ivy, who's, of course, a very major character. And then in 2017, she wrote, directed, and acted in her second feature, I Do Until I Don't. I have to say, I didn't really like that one. It was like, yeah, compared to In a World, it's like, ooh, but maybe other people would feel differently. And she also appeared in the movies Shot Caller and Home Again. And then most recently in 2022, Bell directed two episodes of the miniseries Pam and Tommy. She continued her voice acting on Harley Quinn, and she appeared in the movies Summering, and she had a small role in Black Panther Wakanda Forever. And then this is really intriguing, and I totally want to buy this actually now. I don't usually do audiobooks, but in 2022, she also released an audiobook called Inside Voice, My Obsession with How We Sound. And I was just reading a review of it, and it sounds, it's got all kinds of interesting celebrities participated in it. And it's basically just about things about how our voices affect how we're perceived, how we can change our voices, all kinds of interesting tidbits. So looked really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Hold on, I was pulling up the book. I got super distracted. I got obsessed by that book. Okay.
Yeah, I think it looks super interesting. So I'll put a link to it actually in our show notes. Yeah. It
seems super fascinating. Okay. So Simon Pegg, he is the other major star, and I think we all know who Simon Pegg is. He was born in 1970 in Broxworth, Gloucestershire, England. He graduated from the University of Bristol with a degree in theater, film, and television. Then went into stand-up comedy, saying he wanted to be able to find work independently rather than waiting for the phone to ring. His first IMDb credit is as an actor and writer on a TV show, Six Pairs of Pants, in 1995. He continued working steadily in British TV through the 90s.
And, you know, I always feel bad, too, when I'm doing the research. Like, I'm sure a British person will look at these lists of TV shows and be like, oh, that one was important, and that one was important. And I'm like, I'll read bios to try to find out which ones were deemed important, right? But, like, it goes over my head. Yeah, it goes over my head. Six Pairs of Pants. What the fuck? I don't know.
I think it sounds great.
Well, you also have to realize that in Britain in the 90s, there were four channels.
Yeah.
So everything was important.
Okay, gotcha.
Right, you have to remember that. His breakout role in the UK was in the sitcom Spaced, which was actually really good, 1999 to 2001, which he co-created and co-wrote. It was directed by his frequent collaborator, Edgar Wright, and co-starred his friend and frequent co-star, Nick Frost.
So you have seen that one. That's cool.
Oh, yeah, that one's fantastic. Nice. Absolutely fantastic. It's so nerdy. In the early 2000s, he continued to appear on British TV and also appeared in the U.S. show Band of Brothers and the movie 24-Hour Party People. Mm-hmm. Pegg's international breakout in 2004 with the zombie rom-com Shaun of the Dead, co-written with Edgar Wright and co-starring Nick Frost. The movie is part one of the group's three-flavor Cornetto trilogy, which also includes 2007's Hot Fuzz and The World's End from 2013. Though Pegg has continued to work in British film and TV, in the 2000s, he nabbed three recurring roles in major Hollywood franchises. In 2006, he began playing Benji Dunn in the Mission Impossible series. He's appeared in three more sequels and is also slated to appear in the next two movies. Mm-hmm. In 2009, he also became part of the Star Trek universe, taking on the role of Scotty in the reboot, appearing in two further Star Trek movies, and is also co-writing Star Trek Beyond. Also in 2009, he began voice acting as Buck in the Ice Age animated movies and has appeared in four films in that universe.
Yeah, like he's really like making some Hollywood bank, like kind of like low key. I never really realized it until I looked at this and I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. He knows what he's doing. Other work before Man Up includes the rom-com Run, Fat Boy, Run, Burke and Hare, and the 2011 sci-fi comedy Paul. The Adventures of Tintin, Hector and the Search for Happiness, Kill Me Three Times, and the sci-fi comedy Absolutely Anything.
I've seen like Run, Fat Boy, Run, and that was kind of fun rom-com. But I'm like dying to see the movie Absolutely Anything now. It's like it's directed and written by one of the Monty Python members, and it has some of their voice work. And like it's like one mortal is given the ability to do anything they want. And then, like, these gods or aliens are going to decide if the human race is worthy based on his decisions. It looks like a good high concept comedy.
Yeah, I haven't even heard of that one.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it either. And I'm just, like, looking it up. And then I saw the trailer and I'm like, okay, I need to see this.
Since Man Up, Pegg has continued to work in the Mission Impossible, Star Trek, and Ice Age franchises. Some of his other work includes a small voice acting role in The Force Awakens in 2015 and roles in Ready Player One, Slaughterhouse Rules, Lost Transmissions, Inheritance, voice work in The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, which is the new one, and a TV series called Truth Seekers. Oh my God, that one's so good, which he co-created with co-star Nick Frost and is a very British TV series, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah. Most recently, Peg has appeared in the TV series Undeclared Wars and The Boys, the Apple TV animated movie Luck, and the latest installment of the Ice Age series, because he's working that Ice Age all the time. Peg has a number of projects in the works, including two Mission Impossible movies and a Star Trek sequel, which I am super excited about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was really sad when they weren't going to do any more Star Treks. Those are my favorite of the franchise. Oh, okay. They killed, but now he's brought it back single-handedly, so I'm excited.
Love it.
Yeah. He's also completed a film called Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose, and will do voice work on an animated movie called Hump and in the Hogwarts Legacy video game. Peg has worked as a writer on many of his projects, including the Cornetto trilogy, and also began producing in 2004. In a 2018 Guardian interview, Peg opened up about his struggles with depression and alcoholism. Peg said he'd suffered from depression from about an age 18 and used alcohol to self-medicate. By around 2006, he says he'd developed a serious alcohol problem, but he kept it hidden, even from his friend and collaborator, Nick Frost. Peg began doing rehab and AA around 2010 and has remained sober. Peg said, "I'm not ashamed of what happened, and I think if anyone finds any relationship to it, then it might motivate them to get well. But I am not proud of it either. I don't think it's cool, like I was Mr. Rock and Roll, blackout, and all that shit. It wasn't. It was just terrible."
That's really, I'm really respect that he like opens up about it and tells people about it too, and just lets them know, because people do need to hear that. You know, celebrities have been there. Celebrities who seem really successful, and then they got better.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm just way impressed with his work, man. I'm also really impressed with our screenwriter, Tess Morris. She grew up in London and wrote from an early age. Before Man Up, she'd written a short film called Beer Goggles, a few episodes of TV, and had an additional writing credit on the romantic heist film Love Punch, which stars Emma Thompson and Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, yeah. And let me really pause quickly. Have either of you seen Love Punch? Because I have.
I have not. I feel like I only just saw some kind of preview for it, and I'm like, oh, what's this? So it's on my radar.
I feel like especially Sybil, you might vibe with it. I don't know why. I just feel like you might. So I'll just leave it there.
I mean, it does have Emma Thompson and Pierce Brosnan.
Right? Yeah. So Man Up was her first solo feature writing credit. Morris is a fan of the romantic comedy genre, high five, and told The Guardian she's sick of getting into conversations with people who dismiss the romantic comedy genre, saying, "You don't dismiss all thrillers, you don't dismiss all horrors."
Exactly.
Morris credits the book Writing the Romantic Comedy by Billy Murnett with helping her to understand how to write for the genre. Girls, I have this book.
Do you?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Okay.
In fact, I had an edition of it, lent it to a friend, and it was like, you know, I need to replace that book, and it has the latest edition. I got it for Christmas this year. Yes.
Nice. I bought it, actually, after doing research for this show. I bought the book because I'm like, I need some inspiration here. So,
yeah. Yes. Let's read it.
Yeah.
Together. Okay,
cool. Let's get it done.
Since Man Up, Morris has written 8 episodes of the TV show Casual and 1 episode for The Great. She's also listed as co-producer for 10 episodes of The Great. She's in pre-production for another romantic comedy called Sooner or Later. The IMDb description says it follows Nora, a British journalist who is hired to write a piece for a Hollywood playboy attempting to reinvent his image.
Yeah, I have to say that movie plot intrigues me, and yes. I really feel like Chris Evans would be good as the Hollywood playboy, but I haven't nailed down who I think would be the good British journalist.
I mean, I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
I guess it could be like a gay love story. We could have a British actor. I don't know. It could be anything. Anyway.
I mean, I'd be much more intrigued by that, actually. Be super intrigued by that.
I'd have to think a little bit
more. Neil Patrick Harris could be the actor then. Oh my God.
He could be He could do it.
And then there'd be a British dude and he'd be like trying to help him rehabilitate his Playboy image. Ooh, okay.
I'm down.
Henry Golding. Okay.
Ooh.
Neil Patrick Harris, Henry Golding. I'd watch that. He's not British, but he has a British accent. So there you go.
I'm there for it.
Okay, nobody else casts as fast as I do, like, apparently. So there's a lot of other intriguing cast in this movie. Rory Kinnear plays kind of this creepy guy named Sean from Nancy's past. Sharon Horgan plays Nancy's sister. Harriet Walter and Ken Stott play Nancy's parents. And Olivia Williams plays Jack's ex-wife. And like, you're just going to see a lot of British actors in here that you're like, oh yeah, you. It's going to, mm-hmm. you're going to be intrigued.
Yeah. The mom.
Yeah.
She shows up everywhere.
Yeah, she was the evil like sister-in-law in Sense and Sensibility. That's what I remember her
totally.
From.
Yep.
Harriet Walter. Yep. She's rad.
Oh man. Yeah. All right, so let's get into the opening of the movie here. So we begin this movie. We see this engagement party that's happening that has like a Hawaiian theme. And Nancy is supposed to be going to this party. And she's given herself kind of a pep talk in the mirror and just kind of miming conversation like that she's going to have at this party. I found this kind of relatable. How about you guys?
Sometimes. No. I usually do it afterwards.
Oh,
like after I've had all conversations, I replay them in my head maybe and like what I would have said and should have said. And yeah,
that's much more me. Like I'm like, I'm such a loser. I did that party wrong. I partied badly and I'm a loser. And then I'll do it like for 25 years later.
Oh, no.
100%.
High five.
Sitting alone at night, I'll be like, remember that time when I was 20 and I was stupid at a party that nobody remembers but me, I'm sure.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I relate to the pep talk in the mirror thing, like, or at least like kind of looking at yourself and like thinking, how am I going to look at this party or something? Like, I'm putting on the lipstick and then taking it off immediately. That is so me. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But then they're all stained and shit. And it's like, everyone saw that I did this.
And then like going down. So she goes down and then is like, never mind. It's not even going to happen.
Yeah,
I mean, it is a pretty obnoxious looking party, to be honest. Like,
true, but like, aren't all Hawaiian parties going to be like that? Like in a convention center or hotel or whatever?
I'm just saying, like any Hawaiian themed party, unless it was in Hawaii, I would be a little worried.
Like in Britain, Hawaiian themed party in a conference center at a hotel.
Yes. Yeah.
With probably a bunch of accountants or something. Like something.
Anyway, yeah, it just doesn't look ideal. Yeah. But anyway, Nancy decides to give up on the party. She starts watching Silence of the Lambs, which will be important later. And then Sam from Game of Thrones comes in and brings her room service. I was so psyched to see him. I was like, it's Sam. It's Sam Tarly. Anything more about that or like...
I just thought it was a cute exchange because as he's like doing room service, her sister calls and then the sister's like, let me speak to him. And then she's like, yes, ma'am. And she's like, tell her to put the dress on. And that was just a very cute, funny little exchange where this poor room service guy got roped into this
weird sister dynamic. Yeah, I don't have a sister dynamic to base anything off of. So this has never happened to me. Yeah. I do like the sister dynamic that's set up right away in the movie, though.
Yes, it's very sweet. My sister would, in the past, maybe try to push me into, I call her like Lucy to my Ethel, like getting me into like scrapes and situations and stuff like that. But it wouldn't have been so sweet and loving. Would have been like, we're doing it now, and I'd be like, okay, all right.
I wasn't sure like how I felt about the framing device of her sister and this looming anniversary party for her parents at first, but when I really think about it, it gives like Nancy's character more depth, and like that sister relationship subs in for kind of like that best friend relationship you have in a lot of rom-coms. So it's not just like two people talking in a room, you know, removed from everyone else.
Right. I also think that this whole section is like a really good way of just kind of like setting up who she is as a person, who her mm-hmm. like her family dynamic, like she is close to her family and her mm-hmm. sister, and like she's kind of an introvert who's just trying to find her way. Yeah. And she's kind of like been failing at it for a little bit now because her family's like, especially her sister's like, dude, you've got to go do this for reals now. This is gone. Yeah. This has gone on too long.
Yeah. I mean, it shows that Nancy's a little bit of a hot mess too, yeah. but mm-hmm. that her family isn't like she's not, she might appear outcasty, but they love her and want the best exactly. for her, which I really liked. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Nancy then does go to the party, and on the way, she's listing off some mantras that she has in her little notebook. Among them, put yourself out there, take chances. And we'll talk about mantras in general in a few minutes here in more depth. But then she gets the actual party. And I noticed this time, like, Phoebe Waller-Bridge of Fleabag is one of the engaged couples in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that show, but I was like, oh, I see you. I see what's going on here. And same. Yeah, and then Nancy has been also avoiding the party because they're trying to set her up on like a date at this engagement party, which does sound kind of awkward, to be honest. And the date ends up being like pretty much as awkward as it could possibly go.
Yeah. I mean, well, I feel like Nancy. People like, she's like, these setups never work. They're so bad. I've never wanted that. Or people have like offered or tried or something. And I'm like, shut that down. So awkward. And you obviously don't know me and love me the way you say you do. So I think, you know, their funny conversation about the beer looking like Wee, which is
oh no, it wasn't the beer looked like wee. It's that she shook his hand and she said, oh, sorry, my hand.
Oh, my
wet.
Hand feels like right.
But yes. It's not wee. And I'm like, oh
right.
And then she just keeps talking about pee, like, or wee the whole time. Wee, and I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, like, so incredibly socially awkward. Just like somebody please just like shush her and be her wingman.
So right. The funny thing about this I noticed later is like later in the movie you find out she's supposed to be a journalist, and I'm like, how is she a journalist and she's this awkward? But Lee pointed out that some people are awkward only in social situations but not in their profession. So mm-hmm. I guess mm-hmm. that could excuse it.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever been this awkward in an interpersonal interaction, do you think?
No, but I have so much trouble watching this. This is why I can't watch shows like The Office and stuff, because like when people are this awkward, I just want to like walk up to them and be like, I got this. You just I got this for you.
All right. So, and I want to dig in a little more to Nancy's mantras now after we're out of the awkward party. So this is a full list of her mantras that are written in her notebook. Put yourself out there. Take chances. Get stronger thighs. Be more deviant, which I don't really know if we saw that as much. Learn French. Cook more. Understand the Israeli-Palestinian conflict better. And engage with life. So what do you guys think of this random list of mantras she's got going there?
Well, I mean, get stronger thighs will always come in handy.
Cook more. It's a good one. I mean, they're fine, but like, then you need to break them down and like, okay, what are your steps to learning French? And what is your steps to learning the Israeli-Palestinian conflict better? You know what I mean? Like,
is this an Atomic Habits influence here? Is that what we got?
This is like all, yeah. Or like a bullet journal thing or man.
No, I agree. I just think what I like about this list is it's like such a random mix of like really big life, like, sort of like life mottos combined with like really tiny things and like those those perennial goals people will put on their New Year's resolutions and never quite get to. Like people mm-hmm. will have like every year cook more or learn French, and it just gets put off and put off and put off. You know what I mean? So for me, it was a very perfectly written list of like that some 34-year-old woman might have in her journal.
Yeah. Although I wonder why you would say those things to yourself as you're approaching this particular interaction. I could maybe see like take chances and engage with life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because the movie wants us to know what all of her mantras are.
Okay, fine. fine.
That's
fine.
The only reason. Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. And I wanted to know, like, do you guys keep a similar type of list like this? Like Sophia?
I have in the past. and it was good. It was good for me to have, and I have thought about doing it again, and yet I can't seem to again find the words for them. Anyway, so it served a purpose when it did.
And you also seem to like have a idea that she needs to break them down more, which I agree with. Like when I started really succeeding at my resolutions and goals, mm-hmm. was when I started making a daily task that correlated to them, or a weekly task that correlated to them. You know what I mean? Like, so you need to meditate half an hour a day if you want to become more spiritual, or you need to do yoga 5 minutes a day, like if you want to start doing yoga again. Just get yourself a really concrete like way of starting that goal. And that's really made a huge
difference. I have to agree with that. Like you have to have that. You have to, it has to be something concrete, and it has to be something concrete that you actually block out the time for as well. So you can't just be like, I'm going to cook more, and you're, and then be like, I'm going to make sure I cook one meal a week. You're like, okay, I'm going to cook more. I'm going to cook one meal a week, and I'm going to set aside time to make a grocery list, go to the grocery store and buy the food to make that.
Yeah.
Right.
You need to plan for your goal.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just like this like big looming thing that's like pie in the sky and is too overwhelming to actually get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that I am like a big picture person, big ideas. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a very long time to quote unquote enjoy the process and like figure out how to have a process. And so like kind of intuitively, it's like, I got to break this down into smaller pieces. And yes, it is very Atomic Habits. It's like, make it easy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, start with 2 minutes, 2 minutes of whatever you want to do. Because then now you're in the habit of 2 minutes, showing up for 2 minutes and yada, yada. So keeping it concrete / and easy. You can meditate for 5 minutes. Sure, I can do that.
Yeah.
Right. And it totally is legit. So.
And Sybil, do you have any like resolutions or mantras or things like that, like in general or at present?
I mean, I will be straight up with you. Generally, my mantra, and it's been my mantra for a while, is just be awesome. I mean, honest to God, it's just like, be awesome. So like when I'm like sitting around being like fucking feeling ridiculous and sorry for myself, I'll be like, have a 15-minute pity party and then like pick yourself up and be awesome. And sometimes being awesome is like the real word of awesome, which is just like, you know, being like great and bigger. And so it's like being bigger than yourself, being bigger than you currently were, and you were just having a pity party. So cool. All you have to be is a little bit better.
Okay. Okay.
High five. Yeah. Love it.
All right. So I think we talked about mantras and resolutions enough. I think we've given people something to think about. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
We've given, this is our public service section of the podcast. So now we'll move on to talking shit about movies. Okay. So Nancy leaves the party thinking about what an ass she made of herself at the party. And she's on the train on the phone with her sister, and we get introduced to the plot point where Nancy's going to her parents' anniversary party, and they're really expecting that she's going to give a great speech for her parents' anniversary. And her sister also encourages her, don't give up on love, like you're going to find someone, it's going to be okay. And they just have this nice casual like kind of relationship where like, you know, Nancy can say like fuck off to her sister in that kind of affectionate British way. And it's not so mucky or like it's not like tropey. It's like a real naturalistic conversation. And then on the same train trip, Nancy is seated across from a girl we later learn is named Jessica, and she's overhearing the phone call. And she tries to push a self-help book onto Nancy called 6 Billion People and You. And I'm going to play a clip now of Jessica interacting with Nancy.
Sorry, we couldn't help overhearing. You should really think about reading this.
Right. Did it then?
Did it what?
Change your life?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
But maybe not as well.
Well, I like to give everything a go because otherwise what's the point? You've got to hope it's going to work, haven't you? Because what is life without hope? Death
it is then.
You see, you do need to read it. I would lend you my copy, but I need it for my date.
Why do you need a book for a date?
Oh, and it's how we're going to recognise each other.
Oh, it's a setup.
Well, they always work.
They often work, if the matchmaker done their homework.
Right, because all successful relationships are based on whether you're both outdoorsy types.
I just think you should read it.
I need to.
It was an international bestseller.
So is The Da Vinci Code.
Oh, another excellent book.
Not an excellent book.
I think it's exactly what you need.
Why is everyone always telling me what I need?
Perhaps if they're always telling you, you should listen.
I think you need a shh. You need a shh mouth.
Me to shh?
I do, yeah. It would be great.
I'm really sitting...
It's time. I think we're done.
I could imagine you doing that, Sybil. I could imagine you saying it like that. Would you do it?
I 100% would do that. I would have been like, you know what, you need a now.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty obnoxious, that Jessica. I feel like she means well, but like, yeah.
Right.
Do you relate to either character in this scenario?
You had like Despair Hole, and then you have like Bright and Shiny.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, who do you relate to more, Despair Hole, Bright and Shiny, or do you see yourself in both of them?
I mean, I can see depending on the day.
Yeah.
Depending on the day.
Yeah. I feel like I have an inner Jessica, like where I want to help people and give them advice that maybe they don't want sometimes. But I have to like hold myself back from doing that because I know people don't want that. And I can sometimes be cheerful when people don't want that. And so like I have that personality, but I also totally relate to Nancy here. Like you just don't want some like random stranger like butting into your life and listening to your phone call. Right. And I respect that she asserts herself.
Yeah. I'm a fan of like sitting with somebody in whatever they're feeling, you know, like if Nancy had started crying, like offer her a Kleenex and, you know, that's it. Or if she were happy and jubilant, like give her a high five, not like come in with your 2-bit toxic positivity. You know what I'm saying?
But we've also talked about, or we talked about in the previous podcast I was on, is that when almost these self-help books for people, it's like finding love for the first time for many people because they feel like they found a way, they found this new thing, it's changed their life. And when you have something new and you found a new way and you've changed your life in some way, you want everyone to have that happiness, that joy. And so you're like, please do this thing. I'm super into it. You should do it too, right?
Sure, sure.
100%. She's playing the same role that Nick plays in Yes Man, being like the inciting event that's showing like you the new way, the new possibility. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you just want to share, you want to share that with everybody. I fell in love. I became a vegan. I learned how to skydive. Whatever it is, that's new thing that changed you, that has given you an epiphany, a new joy for life and living. You just want to share it with people.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're kind of, I can relate to Jessica too, but like, yeah, she's got a shot.
I've also discovered that apparently 6 billion people in you does need to be a book because people want it, even though it's not a book yet.
Yeah. We know about this book. So we know it's called 6 billion People in You, A Guide to Meeting Your Mate in the Modern World. And then we know the blurbs on the back. This book will change your life. What are you waiting for? And then when Nancy wakes up, when the train comes into Waterloo Station, she finds the book in her possession with a bookmark on the page, "Your negative thoughts are ruining your life and everyone else's."
Not passive aggressive in any way.
That's funny.
So this is these are the mysterious facts we know about this book so far. And we can talk more about more that we learned about the book later. But I wish somebody could write the book. I'm sure it's probably some kind of copyright from this movie at this point. So, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Okay. So now we get to London Waterloo Station. I'm sure you've probably been there, right, Sybil?
I have. And by the way, Waterloo Station is freaking ginormous. It's huge. It's like Disneyland size. It feels like it's huge.
Wow. Well, the meeting place for Jessica's blind date, where she's going to hold 6 billion people in you, is under the clock at Waterloo Station. Nancy has the book now and she's trying to catch Jessica, but she can't. And then she ends up under the clock instead. And like Jack finds her there, Simon Pegg's character, assumes she's his date and doesn't really give her any chance to talk whatsoever. He just starts saying, "Oh, we're meeting up. How do we greet each other? Blah, blah, blah." Like he's just kind of himself, very awkward, kind of mirroring the way Nancy was awkward on her setup.
Which it did seem kind of weird to me that I mean, she is holding the book, but mm-hmm. does everybody, like, do you just make the assumption? Wouldn't you just walk up and just be like, hi, I'm Jack. Are you so-and-so?
I feel like it was supposed to show, like, that he was so nervous. You know what I mean? Because his whole, like, everything he talks about, his demeanor seems so nervous in that first scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still, I'm pretty sure that I still would have been like, hi, I think we're supposed to meet.
Right. Yeah, like how it was for the writer, the screenwriter, you know?
Yeah.
She was standing there, some guy was like, are you so-and-so? She's like, no, and then he walks away.
Yeah, well, it would make Nancy look much weirder if, like, he asked her directly, are you my date? You know what I mean?
Right.
And she said yes. In this way, it kind of gives Nancy an excuse to go along with it because, like,
true. Yeah.
He actually invasively takes her phone from her and, like, answers it for her and says, yeah, she's okay, I'm not a psychopath. And, like,
right.
We're going to have our date now. So, like, he's kind of invaded her space in this way, which probably gives the audience permission to identify with Nancy going along with him, I think. You know?
Well, and this is the one place where I had to work really hard to suspend my disbelief because, like, mm-hmm. I was like, there's no way I would have ever, like, just lied at this point. Not ever. Like, I don't know this guy at all. And it's not like – even I try to imagine, like, even if he was, like, the hottest guy or he – like, we had everything in common. I'm like, nope. We're going to end up in a big misunderstanding. Hell no. That's not a way to start any relationship. Where does she think this is going?
Yeah, I think she's just, like, at this low point. My feeling is she's at this really low point. And then he says quid pro quo, which is like she saw her the previous night. She was mouthing all the words to Silence of the Lambs. She obviously loves that movie. And it's so, like, it almost maybe could feel like a sign from the universe. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he's the kind of guy like me, an awkward person who would say quid pro quo on a first date. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we're kindred spirits. And yeah, you're right, Sybil. Where would this go, right? But like
once again, even if it was a sign from the universe isn't like, hey, girl, you should 100% lie to this bro. That's what you should do. Good relationships are built on lies.
Yeah.
It's going to be the best meet cute story later when they're like, and then I lied to him.
Did he say her name at first, like, too, or did he not say her name?
Because, like, if he didn't, I don't think.
Because if he hadn't said her name, she could have made up a story like, oh, I was waiting for a blind date too. So, like, we just must have gotten the wrong date. You know what I mean? If you wanted to be devious, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was just like, this is where I had to be like, okay, it's okay. Like, just deep, deep down. So, well, you know, you're just going to let it go.
But, right.
I did lose respect for her.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
It would have been okay if she had, like, if this had been written where she kept trying to tell him and was like, no, and he just kept cutting her off.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's go. I have an appointment. And, like, she's like, wait. And then she was like, you know what? Never mind. I'll explain it to him when we get wherever we're going.
Yeah.
You know what? That I would have been like, okay. And then, like, they were talking over lunch or something. And she's like, you know what? I'm into this guy now. And now she's in it. And she's like, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's only going to be like a lunch. And then she was like, oh, I thought it was just a lunch date. You know, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then immediately she confessed, and then they just decided to keep going with their date. I would have been more about this movie.
I think I'm okay with it because it's a movie and because it's a rom-com.
Of course.
And most of them just have something like this in them. So I was kind of like, all right, I'll go with it.
You know the whole time that there's this big misunderstanding is coming.
Right. That's why it was so stressful for me watching. I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
Oh my God, this is... yeah.
And I think I also accepted it, though, because I knew that Jessica was supposed to be his date. And when I thought about him with Jessica, I'm like, no, not a match. So, like, as an audience, I'm like, I want these two to be together, not those two. So, there we go.
Yeah, good point.
Now we're back with Nancy's family for a minute. It regularly kind of cuts back to her sister, her brother-in-law, and her parents during the movie. They're preparing for the anniversary party. I don't want to talk about all of these when they come up, but this one was kind of cute.
I did want to cut in here, though. I liked the use of this in the script. Like, I liked the use of the family as, like, going back and forth and making it not just about this, like, rom-com. They're always just the couple together. I like the use of the family in this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, were you interested in their story, too? Or what did
I
you
was.
Think
I was interested in their story. And I just thought it rounded out the script a little bit. It kept it moving for me a little better.
Okay. Nice. And I like there's a part of this scene where they're buying the alcohol for the party, and the brother-in-law is telling the dad that he's really impressed by the length of their marriage And the dad said, like, the secret is get through the first 30, 40 years, then just kind of give up. From that point on, it's a breeze.
Reality.
That's cute.
It's that very British humor, I think, too, that like dark humor, you know? Like,
right.
Yeah. I'm like, well, 30, 40 years is a long time as it is. Like, right? Like, yep. I don't know. Like, okay. So back to the date. They are drinking on London's South Bank. I don't know much about London's South Bank. Is there anything you want to add to our knowledge about this, either of you? Because I know, Sylvia, you've been to London too. And Sybil, you were there for a while.
A long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the South Bank, it's like fancy.
Okay.
It's fancy. It's partying. There's partying on the South Bank as well.
And so we get a lot of overhead shots of London at this part of the movie, just kind of setting our scene and, I don't know, making it look exciting and glamorous, I guess. And they go to a pop-up bar to get to know each other a little bit. So there's a point in the scene where they decide to turn off their phones. And this is right after Tom, who has set up the blind date, calls, saying that, like, he's worried because Jessica called and said that they didn't meet up. And this is where Nancy learns what her new name is supposed to be, Jessica. And yeah, it's good that they turned off their phones, I guess, because otherwise we'd be getting lots of frantic messages being like, what the hell went on here? One thing that didn't occur to me, though, until after I was watching the movie was like, wouldn't, like, in the modern age of technology and phones, wouldn't he have already known what Jessica looked like before the date? Or, you know?
Right. Yeah. Unless they've decided not to, you know what I mean? I guess. Like, let's go old school and we'll be like, Yeah.
Have a surprise. We don't want to ghost each other because we didn't know what each other looked like. We want to ghost each other in person instead.
So, yeah. And in this whole scene, Nancy's basically learning stuff about Jack, and she's learning stuff about her assumed identity, Jessica. So we find out that Jack is divorced. His ex-wife cheated on him. He works in marketing, but he wants to be a painter. And Jessica, her new identity, the girl on the train, is a 24-year-old triathlete who works in the city. We also get, though, this bonding moment where, like, they talk about working in the city and Nancy quotes a line from the movie Wall Street or something like, what is the line she quotes? Lunch is for wimps. And then, like, you want a friend, get a dog. And she's so happy that Jack actually knows her movie quote. So once again, they're bonding over the movies. Any comments about this part of the movie?
You're getting to know, first of all, you're like learning that, like, who these people are, and they're, you know, that she's kind of in trouble because clearly she's not a 24-year-old triathlon.
She's eating chips while, you know.
And she's not 24 years old. That's hysterical. Right.
I feel like you could buy that she was 24 if you were told she was 24 and you wanted to believe it. I think you could buy it.
Okay. And then
I've seen some 24-year-olds who looked rougher than her. That's all I'm going to say.
If they're triathletes. Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. And then, yeah, she's eating the chips. And then, you know, you're finding out like the Jack has some baggage. He's got some baggage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just love how they bond over the movie quote, though. Like, I get that. Like, it's not like something that would like make or break a relationship with somebody, but I always get so excited when somebody has like this pop culture interest in common with me. We can talk on the same wavelength like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. Anything else, Soph?
Nope. I mean, I was enjoying it, but I was also, you know, like I said, on edge.
you're looking forward to the reveal, right? You're looking
forward to that. Yeah, okay.
We get to a bar where they go to, which is a cantina, I guess. And Jack is a regular at this bar. And now we learn a little bit more about 6 billion people and you. Apparently there's a thing from the book 6 billion people and you where you're supposed to swap notebooks with each other on a date. And the lists that you are supposed to write in these notebooks are just like this kind of like list of random favorite things or whatever, like favorite band, favorite food, lifetime ambition, favorite season, favorite place, favorite drink, blah, 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 blah. Like, I don't know.
A little superficial, you know, like, woo, okay. You couldn't just ask each other these things? You needed
I guess deeply think about them? I guess lifetime ambition, right? Like, that could be a little deeper. But, you know, this is a pretty common thing. So, like, there's a lot of – if you actually Google questions to ask on a date, there's, like, so many results for that, okay? Like one of – I saw a women's health article that said a list of 193 questions to ask on a first date.
That's a lot of questions. The dudes are like, I can't even talk to you anymore.
I mean, at that point, just come with your resume, right? Right? And like your...
Okay, but like for real, like it can be awkward trying to figure out what to talk about on a first date, I think. And like sometimes I have in my past, like I have like actually like written down in advance some questions I want to remember to ask, or like just put in some topics to talk about if like things get weird, right? Like, so I can see that. The exchanging notebooks is a little formal, but like there's also stuff like the New York Times 36 questions that lead to love. Well, the New York Times didn't make it, but they reported on it. The 36 questions that lead to love. And you ask these questions and you get like increasingly more intimate. But yeah, this is a thing, like these different questions. And like, if you think about it too, dating sites have lists of questions. Apparently OkCupid has about 4,000 questions total on there. Wow. You can answer on your profile. So I take it neither of you guys think these questions are like super useful.
No. I don't think these are any of the questions I'd ask.
Well, I'm not saying these. What about other questions though? Like in general, like,
I mean, I guess, do you have kids would be important to me.
Yeah.
Do you have kids? STDs that I should know about?
Okay.
Like, what are your kinks?
Like, that's like what you'd ask for, like, first date chat, though, or like,
yeah, actually, yeah,
okay. See, yeah, I think it's good to have like little first date chat questions, like, even before you get into stuff like the STDs and the kinks and stuff like that.
These are the important things. I don't even waste time with you if you've got like a kink I'm not into.
The thing with me about having the list of these kind of icebreaker questions, though, is that like when you have nerves, when you are awkward, they can be really helpful. And what's interesting is Nancy is normally so awkward, but when she's pretending to be Jessica, she's not. And she kind of doesn't need these questions.
She's a reporter, right? She should just be like, this is like my bread and butter. This is what I do.
Well, but she journalist, should have been, she is should, that the same thing?
She should have been like that with the other guy too then, though. I think it's interesting that she's playing this role now, and now she's not nervous and she's making this kind of free-flowing conversation. Is it that she's playing a role, or is it that just like he's the right guy?
I don't know. Going back to when she first meets that guy at the Hawaiian-themed engagement party and saying something like, oh, it's not we. Like, I would probably say something like that and like make a joke about it. And if they don't think it's funny, well, then like, yeah, guess we're not a match already. Like, if you're not going to be goofy with it and roll it, you know what I mean? And
yeah. Yeah. So, be a little bit generous with your demeanor anyway, you know, like, yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. That guy wasn't like really helping her to feel at ease.
No. Right. So
it might also be helpful that Jack is the one who's awkward right off the bat, like trying to figure out whether to hug her, shake her hand, kiss her or whatever, and then like just talking nonstop. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyway, I thought we'd get more mileage out of these questions, but you guys are like, no, veto it.
Not feeling them.
So if you're going into a date, if you're going in to meet a new person, you're just going in cold and you're just hoping that the conversation's going to come.
I mean,
I suppose, you know, like, could think of things I want to know about or am interested in and yada, yada. Right.
Yeah.
I don't date the people, but I have intimate conversations with people all the time who I've never met before when they're in, you know, various uncomfortable situations. And I find that talking about their animals is always a good topic.
Okay, good one.
Kids. You talk about kids, animals, or hobbies.
Okay. Sybil's got a good list for you, a good beginner list. Kids, animals,
that's
hobbies.
Really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you want like really long lists of random questions to ask people, I will also put the links to some of these in the show notes. So if you're going on a date and you, like me, like to have lots of like armor prepared for, well, not armor. If you, like me, want to have lots of like ammunition prepared in case your mind goes blank, I'll put those in the show notes as well. Okay, so like the lists, obviously Jack has made the proper list from 6 billion people in you. And Nancy has not, because she didn't read this book and she is not Jessica. So she has her list of mantras. Plus she has written on her book, Black Pant Wash, which she tries to play off as her favorite pant. Yeah.
That was funny.
Don't you think Jack would notice this is not the right list though?
I don't know. He was nervous still, maybe. And then he was trying to be cool. Because when you're trying to be cool, you're just like, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, in what world do you think to yourself, this chick is not the chick I'm supposed to be dating?
That's true.
Because it, like, who just was like, yeah, no, I'm totally that person. a psycho.
Don't hold back, Sybil.
Seriously, though, I want you to imagine, put yourself in Jack's place.
Well, okay, but it would be different. Like, okay, as a girl with a guy, it would weird me out more than I think, just because guys.
Doesn't
like,
matter. It's a right. psycho. No matter what you do, it's a psycho.
I don't know. I have a theory, and I can talk about it later too. But I have a theory that this is why Sean is a character in the movie, because Nancy needs to look normal compared to somebody.
That is an incredibly good point. Because it was the one character I'm like, I don't understand this character at all. This character makes no sense and should just be like removed from this film. But that makes more sense.
And I've tried to think about, we'll talk about more when we get there, but I've tried to think about what it would be like if you removed Sean from the movie. And I just can't conceptualize the movie without him.
She does look way more psycho because she is a psycho.
So Nancy does actually try to confess that she's not his date in this scene too. She tries, but then he interrupts her right away. Well, I have a confession to make too. And he's like, I don't really know who Black Pant Wash the band is. Like,
and her answer should have been like, nobody does.
Right.
But then right away he's on to like, should we go bowling? Let's go bowling. And she loves bowling. So she's like, well, we'll just go. So she does make an attempt. An attempt was made. Jack talks a lot. So
Yeah.
She still probably should have said something.
Yeah. He's not really reading the room, you know.
Well, at this point, he's extra nervous, and we don't know why yet, but he's extra nervous here.
Right.
Right? Yeah. In this bar.
Yep.
We can't talk about why, but he is. It's important to note it right now.
So now we go to the bowling alley. We have a nice little bowling montage.
Having a shit ton of fun. They are drinking, they're bowling, and they're high-fiving, and it looks like a super awesome date.
And yeah, Nancy's like waving her butt a little bit while she's like rolling a ball on the alley. Yeah. It made me want to go bowling.
Totally love bowling. So much fun.
It was like the Mountain Dew version of Mountain Dew commercial version of a bowling alley.
they would have been in like fighter jets though. It would have been like rah like that.
That's funny.
Well, you know,
this is like the Snapple version.
No. I'm talking about like the Mountain Dew ads when they would go to the swimming hole or something. They'd be having the best time anybody ever had at a swimming hole.
Yeah.
But now with the bowling alley.
I agree. Yeah. They were having the best time ever.
Yeah. They should like actually make that into a Mountain Dew commercial and just stick some Mountain Dews in at the end. I like it.
Mountain Dew is like, we don't want to have anything to do with. You're not going to do the dew at the bowling alley.
Oh. I like it. Funny. Anyway, yeah, I like this montage. I think it does a lot to build their chemistry. But then we run into Sean, who works at the bowling alley, played by Rory Kinnear, who's like a really brilliant actor. Like, I know him best from, he plays Frankenstein's monster in Penny Dreadful. He's so good in that. So much emotion and pathos and just depth, right? I've heard he's been in a lot of other really good dramatic projects. Have you guys seen him in other things?
Mm-hmm. No, not that I remember.
Well, he's very well known as like a dramatic actor, apparently. Mm-hmm. So him in this like really weird comic role is a different thing entirely. But she runs into Sean, and he had a thing for her in high school, like a big thing. And we find out like from their conversation that he was taking pictures outside of her room from a tree. So he's like full on stalker.
Super creepy. And she doesn't remember him. And he's like lost a bunch of weight from high school. Like she doesn't remember him at all. It's,
So I'm going to play. Creepy. I need to play a clip of his voice because like the thing he does with his voice in this movie just like makes him extra creepy. So I'm going to play just a little clip of creepy Sean here.
Nancy. I'll eat some nachos. On the house.
That's all right. I've got a wheat allergy anyway.
No, hey. You remember this?
Where'd you get that?
It's in my wallet.
Who took it?
I did.
But that's my bedroom. I don't remember you ever being in my bedroom.
I wasn't in your bedroom, silly. I was outside. In a tree.
Jessica. Watch and weep.
Okay.
Why is he calling you Jessica? I'm not called Jessica. You're called Nancy. Nancy Patterson.
Sean, I'm in a bit of a situation here.
Nancy. I can't do it. Can you guys do it? Nancy.
No.
I was in a tree. Oh my God, he's so creepy.
He's so creepy.
Now, like, this whole situation here, as soon as I met this guy, I would be out of that bowling alley.
Right.
I would have too. I would have been like, we gotta go. Bye.
Right.
And I might have even said, we gotta leave this bowling alley because that guy was a super crazy stalker I had in high school. So we gotta go.
And also, I'm calling the police.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And this guy has pictures of my bedroom in his pocket now to this day, which is also creepy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why does he have them now? We haven't seen each other for how long?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Police time.
Like, yeah, but like, just like her, this is the only part of the movie where I'm like, really, really, this is what you're doing. Like, the only thing I can think of, she's just so caught so off guard that she's like, and maybe she's drinking so much that she is not thinking well, because like,
no, I'm going to tell you what it is. She's a psycho.
Well, just in that vein of like, throw rocks at your hero, like what now can happen to her? Mm-hmm. Like, throw another rock at her. Stalker from high school shows up to foil her plan. And
yeah, but instead of leaving, instead of like doing a number of things she could have done, like confessing to Jack immediately, mm-hmm. and leaving, just mm-hmm. leaving without confessing, mm-hmm. telling Jack that this guy's a crazy stalker, don't listen to anything he says, and leaving, like none of these does she do. Instead, she gives in to like Sean, who then blackmails her and says, listen, I'm going to tell your date who you really are. Oh, she tells Sean that she's on somebody else's blind date, giving him power. And then when he blackmails her and says, you have to give me a blowjob, that's his first offer.
Right. Which also so beyond creepy.
Yeah.
Gross. And for a second, I'm like, oh, I'm going to hate this character if she agrees, but she doesn't.
Yeah. 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 So the first offer is a blowjob and she's like, oh, you out of your fucking mind. And then he says a hand job. She's like, no. And then she's like, a kiss. And then she like agrees to this. I'm like, I would not kiss that dude. Run away. Like, seriously. Mm-hmm. He does function, though, I think, to make Nancy look more sane. So there you go.
Okay. I like this. Because like, this is the one part that I was like, I don't understand who this character is, why mm-hmm. he's here at all. He's not necessary to this film in any way. And he just adds like such a level of creepiness.
Uh-huh.
That I don't understand. Like, and he's not really funny. He's just weird.
Uh-huh.
What would you do instead as a plot device to get her to have to confess? Like, what do you think?
She would just confess. She doesn't have to confess. She'll just look at him and be like, I have a confession.
Okay, okay.
She would just be honest and mm-hmm. less psycho.
Okay, okay. I feel you.
She's just a mess. She's not psycho. She's just a mess.
I'm more sympathetic. I'm with Sophia.
At some point, something would happen and he'd be like, what? Or maybe Sean isn't a creep and he's just like, he calls her by her name and, you know, mm-hmm. some, and they're just, and he's like, wait, what do you mean? I thought your name was Jessica. You have to be creepy.
You could also make him like a work colleague or her cousin or something. You're right.
This is a section that I don't understand it. Like, I see what you're saying, because maybe, you know, then she seems less like insane and psycho, because she does. Yeah. No matter how I play it, she seems like psycho.
Well, Sophia and I are more sympathetic to her plight, I guess.
Well, that's okay. And that's all right. But I'm going to say she's psycho. And when the meet cute story comes out, I'm going to go to her friends and be like, so she's a full on psycho, right?
But I mean, what I love, as we're coming up to this, you find that Jack is a little off of his.
Which is fine.
They're meant to be equally. Together.
Yeah, psycho. They're both psycho.
Psycho. Yeah.
Yeah. They're meant to be together. They're so psycho.
I feel like we're overusing the word psycho, though. I feel like psychos are like overplaying it a little bit. Like,
okay, they're both. Mentally unhinged.
They're having problems.
They're both a mess. Yeah. Both got shit going on and are acting irrationally.
Yeah. But anyway, so like this whole blackmail thing plays out, but I don't know if she was actually ever going to kiss him for real though, because like she ends up going to the bathroom to get some food out of her teeth. And then Sean is like laying in wait for her in the bathroom, so like in his like underwear,
not completely
naked in his underwear, but like posed in one of the stalls, like in what he thinks is a seductive way. And then he like lures her into the stall to kiss him. They don't actually kiss, but he's like doing this creepy thing where he takes the scarf off of her neck and like tries to draw her in. It's like,
so gross.
And then Jack, for some reason, comes into the bathroom to find Nancy and sees this whole thing going down. And this is when she finally confesses to him that she's not really his date.
So relieved. I was like,
you're like, out of all the times, this should be where it happens. This is no way uncomfortable.
Well, of course, but I have to say, I was also very surprised that it happened at this moment in the film. Mm-hmm. And I think that they talk about that, right?
Yeah. Tess Morris, yeah, talked about that a little bit. Yeah, you can talk
sure,
about it.
Sure, she decided to move the identity reveal much earlier in the film than it might have happened in some other kind of film in order to have fun with them interacting in a new way and also to build emotion. And I think that was great. Yeah. She told Go Into the Story, quote, "I realized I could suddenly do a lot more with the film and that they were actually then finally being themselves. Then when they start to like each other, they're liking each other as themselves, which is obviously much stronger emotion to witness and gives us a much better end to act two turning point," which agree.
Yeah.
I think it was super smart. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like if this was like a How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days kind of movie, it would have happened like almost at the end. Right.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And then it would have been like, that's okay. I love you anyway. And you're like, no, I like that how he reacts. Jack gets angry and he's like, what the hell? But the funny things that he gets angry about are, he's like, are you even a triathlete? Are you even 24? And we're like,
that is my favorite out of all of this. That is my favorite line where he's like, are you even a triathlete? I'm like, that's where you went. That's where you went.
Yeah. That's what she says too. She's like, that's your first question. So it just really reveals that Jack is like unhinged.
He was like,
as well.
I saw myself dating a triathlete who was 24.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This is who I saw myself with.
Yeah. And he's 40. He's 40.
Exactly. He's I saw myself with a hot triathlete chick who was 24.
And Nancy's like already 6 years younger than him in real life. She's 34, right?
Right.
He's like horrified when he finds out she's 34. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. He reacts with these questions. Like, how do you guys think you would react if you were in this situation?
I'd be totally pissed. I would not be like, are you even a triathlete? I'd be like, what the hell? Like, I'd be creeped out.
The first thing I would do is be like, why did you lie to me? Like that'd be the first question. I'd be like, why did you lie to me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a reasonable question to start with, really.
Right.
And then he'd probably find out that you liked him, which, I mean, should be obvious, really, but which would at least be somewhat flattering, you would think, to somebody's ego. But yeah, you might be
more
concerned.
She could have said, like, I met a person on the train who had the book. So like, and she said she was meeting you. And then, you know, like that seemed intriguing. So like, there'd be something to it. I'd be like, okay, well, it wasn't just some strange man, like, kind of knew there was something going on.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think like with a woman meeting a man, it's a little different too. Like the power differentials, women can be creepy too, for sure. Mm-hmm. Right. But like, I feel like I'd feel a little less safe if I had a fake guy show up rather than like him having a fake woman show up. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
What's that old quote? You know, men are afraid of being laughed at and women are afraid that men will kill them. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the dynamic. Like you can certainly have a manipulative, unhinged, could hurt you woman, but it wouldn't happen like that night where he could rape you and kill you that night. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I guess that justifies what I was thinking. Yeah. More or less.
Yeah. He's not likely to take you back to his hotel room, kill you and put you in a suitcase and then, you know, get rid of the body.
Right.
So I'd probably be kind of frightened if that happened. Like I'd be like, okay. But if I were a dude, I think, you know, maybe I could get over it and be like, oh, I'm flattered because this woman liked me so much that she like actually did this really weird thing. Like maybe I don't want to date her, but maybe like I can at least take the ego boost or whatever. Right.
So, okay. Maybe. So if this had happened to you, Jennifer, and you're like, okay, so you're standing there, a guy had come up to you. Do you think in your mind that you would have said that you might have taken over? And then when he found out, what would you have hoped the first thing he would have asked you?
Oh, well, first of all, I wouldn't have gone on somebody else's blind date. I just wouldn't have. I would have been like, wow, like I'm not your blind date, but I totally love that movie. And like, let me give you my number. You know what I mean? Like I love Silence of the Lambs. So, blah, blah, blah. Here's my number. Give me a call like later if your date doesn't work out. That's what I would have done.
Awesome. Sophia, what would you have done? What would you have done, Sophia?
I would never have even gone on this blind date.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would be honest right away and be like, no, I'm not. But, you know, darn for me, you know, if I was interested or thought that person was, you know, charming or something.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. But I would hope that the guy would say, do what you said, Sybil, though, and say, like, why did you do that? Because that's all right. A sensible question.
Like, okay. I put myself in this position and I thought to myself, if I was here, like, what would I hope that the person would ask? I'd be like, why would you lie? So like all the stuff that happened, I was like, this makes no sense to me. The questions that are happening, which is when I like, this is how like, I was like, both these people are fairly unhinged.
He's got his middle age.
This is when I realized. So like, that's why I asked you both. I'm like, so we both understand that everybody on this podcast is, although maybe we've had times where, you know, maybe we're not like all there. At this point, none of us are unhinged. These people are clearly unhinged people.
But like, okay, but everyone like
struggling. He's going through a bad time and they're both doing stupid
things. You can call whatever you want.
But what I want to point out though, is that in movies, everything is heightened, right?
Yes, of course.
So like everyone's personalities and actions are always turned up a couple of degrees. So you have to, when you translate them back to real life, you have to kind of turn it down a couple of degrees and then you get to the, you know what I'm saying?
Until you find people that this like, that it is not a stranger than fiction and this is the crazy crap.
Okay. I suppose. Movies just tend to model like behavior though that is like
the craziest,
that you would not do in real life. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The craziest. Yes. That's it.
Right.
So now that Jack knows that this whole thing is like a sham, he gets really angry and they're like going to go their separate ways. But he realizes he doesn't have his bag and they have to stay together in order to get his notebook back from the cantina.
No, it's like his bag and her notebook. So they both have a reason to go back. Yeah.
Right. And then they race there.
They have a triathlon, which is hysterical.
Yeah, he takes a cab and she's like, because I'll get there faster than you. And so she starts running there and then she finds some dude with a bike and she's like, excuse me, sir. And then you see her on the bike.
Yeah, and my husband pointed out, did you guys notice this? My husband pointed out that she sees this bachelorette party and she actually, or hen party in UK, and she has to like sort of swim through them. He noticed it. I never noticed it. Did you guys notice that?
He notices very small things that we do not. Good for him.
Yeah. Lee's like, look, she's doing like a swimming motion with her arms. So she did the whole triathlon in a sense.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Okay. And as I was watching this, I was like, oh, it's my day to sign up for that triathlon I wanted to do. So I'm like, yay, I'm so in touch with this film.
Nice.
And I did sign up for it. So
good for you.
It's a mini one. It's not a full.
Like, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's more of a triathlon than I'm ever going to do.
Thank you. Yeah.
So they make it. They both make it. And I want to say, I believe that Jack does make it there first.
Oh, you think? No, they arrive at the same time. No,
I think Jack
makes it a tiny bit first.
Well, whatever. It's fine, but they do make it.
They both make it. So Jack's there, and he does get the bag, and Nancy winds up freshening up in the bathroom. Nancy comes out, and she's looking better. You know, she was looking kind of like jacked up from that triathlon.
And she also took off her coat too, and so she's like showing.
Oh, is that what it is? I don't think I noticed. I just know she was like looking. She was looking pretty. She was looking nice.
Yeah, she's
like, put on lipstick too.
I think so, but I think the main thing is she's wearing this like little tank top, and you can see her cleavage. And I'm like, that's what's really good.
Is that what it's cause, like? Her hair looked nice, and I was like, maybe it's because she was sweaty, and she got like her hair is a little curly, and she got like little. You know, but she was looking good. So, and Jack notices, maybe he's like, look at that cleavage. And that she's like, she just looks nice. Right? Yeah. So he's like, look at her body. That's nice.
Yeah.
And this is when you find out why Sean went to this bar.
Okay? Not Sean. Thank God Jack's not at the bar.
Jack. This is why you find out why Jack went to this bar. I have trouble with all these names. They're all such like boring British
people.
That's
true. It's true.
Right. I need more exciting names for these people. All right. Okay. So Jack's ex-wife and her new boyfriend have shown up at the bar because this is his like old bar. This is like a bar that he always goes to. Mm-hmm. And you find out that he brought, you know, this, you know, Nancy. He brought his like new person to their old place. The reason why he took a date there was because he wanted his ex, which is what we all want, our ex, to see us happy with a new person.
Yeah.
He doesn't care what person it is, just body, hot body there with me, right? That's what we want. Hot body there with your person, right? But the ex wasn't there at the time, I don't think. So, but now the ex is there. And you just, and so he, so Jack talks Nancy into pretending in front of his ex to be his girlfriend.
Yeah. And I like this. This gives you like a fake dating trope. Like
it does. And also it helps them kind of like, it helps them kind of shore up that like awkwardness that was like big misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Because they now have like a common enemy, which is Jack's ex-girlfriend.
They do, but it also shows that Jack is ready to like stretch the truth a little bit too. Yes. You know what I mean? Like now we're seeing him be that like unhinged, like
right.
Taking the moment to tell a little, to stretch the truth a little bit, the way Nancy had did earlier.
Mm-hmm. And I love when they're trying to get their story straight and she ends up saying that she was a firewoman, like that's her job.
Doesn't he say that about her?
No.
She says it? Oh, yes, she does.
Because she looks at the fire extinguisher and then she's like trying to think of what her job is. She's like, I was a firewoman. I came to the work party.
Because as a journalist, she's like, I have zero imagination.
I know.
Or you can't just say you're a journalist, or you know what I mean? Which would be a fine job. Whatever.
I know. The awkwardness of they're just them all, always. Just always. And like, they're like, you can tell at this point that they were definitely like riffing off of each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing some improv here because they are, it's just like really funny. They're just like awkward and funny and trying to kind of one up each other on being kind of funny with each other.
So like, and now like for a minute, Jack goes away, I think to get a drink or something. And like the ex-wife is trying to be like, oh, he's always like this. And then Nancy calls them on like, but you guys had an affair, right? You cheated, right? So like, but I guess he's just emotional. She's like, she's seen that this lady's kind of been a jerk. She understands why Jack's been hurt. And so she's kind of on Jack's side now. So when he comes back from getting the drink or whatever, she's decided she's going to make a really good show for the ex-boyfriend, the new boyfriend. So this is Nancy really putting it on strong with Jack to make him look like she's really into him.
You know, when a woman first starts sleeping with a man, she acts like she's a porn star. Am I right? I mean, like, Jack and I, God, anything goes. A little church Presbyterian, a little dinner beneath the bridge, a little guided tour, a site beef, you know where that is. He knows where it is. Sure. God, do you remember that time when you said we should? And I was like, I'm not going to do that. He was like, go on, try it. And I was just thinking, I'm actually quite scared. Because I couldn't see. And then, God, you flipped it. And then all of a sudden, God, I felt, please don't stop. Jack, please don't stop. Don't stop, Jack. Do what you do, Jack. Thank you, Jack. I love your work, Jack. And you lot are like, wow. Our sex life is always going to be like a porn film. And then about 6 months in, the ladies, we drop it down to an 18. And then a 15, maybe a quick 69, but only if we've just had a bath. And then suddenly, whoa, we're a PG-13 wearing tartan pajamas to bed, doing the goodnight rollover before you can say missionary position.
That is a brilliant theory.
Thank you. But you know what, Jack? I really feel like we're going to be in porno land for a lot longer than usual.
Because that's probably what a lot of guys would like their new girlfriend to say in front of their ex-wife. Probably.
That's hilarious. And right away, the When Harry Met Sally call out, right?
I didn't like, see. I homage. I didn't notice that as an homage, like until I saw these articles. Like, yeah, like Tess Morris said it was an homage to the fake orgasm scene, but I didn't put those two together. Did you see that like right away? Did you? Like,
I did. Yeah, I was that's Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, that's so funny.
It was really fast. It was really fast,
right?
But like, I mean, I think any kind of like orgasm in public is always like a
Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it could. Yeah, it could never go long the way it did in When Harry Met Sally, because it'd be like, well, that's a total rip. But yeah, they gave us, she gave us a little bit of it, and that was perfect.
And she said she wanted to put like in that little like sexual piece to like give the audience and Jack a chance to see Nancy as like a more sexual person, just like have his eyes kind of opened to her, you know, in that way. So I kind of like it. I also like the whole porno land thing. There's a certain amount of truth to it too, right? Like the sex life can start out very hot and heavy, and then it like tapers off when you take that person's presence for granted, or your little dopamine, like, you know, wavers, you know, the chemicals when you're first with someone start to like kind of diminish a little bit. So it's there's a truth to it. Yeah.
I also love the call out to Tartan Land, which is the opposite of porno land. So funny. You have your tartan pajamas, tartan land, and then you have porno land.
Yeah. Okay. And then like, I guess Jack's starting to get sad again, like, and bitter, like, even though they've just had this amazing little performance here. So Nancy whisks him away to slow dance with him, so he won't say anything more that's sad or embarrassing in front of his ex. And I like their little conversation here. He's just kind of talking about like his marriage and like how sad it made him to be cheated on, and everyone knew but him. And yeah. I like this whole section. Like, I like their bonding. Did you guys like respect the writing here or the bonding?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was a good use of like how, like, them, once again, they're growing their relationship as both real people to each other now, not like these fake people who they're pretending to be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what makes it so much stronger than a lot of these gimmick rom-coms, probably, where there's a misunderstanding at the center. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, so I'm going to do another clip. I'm sorry, I'm doing too many clips, but like, this is favorite fucking part of the whole movie. I don't know if anyone else feels this way. When they do the reflex by Duran Duran.
Yeah.
You too?
Yeah. At first I was like, what the? And then I was like, wait a minute, this is awesome. Yes.
Sybil, how are you about this scene we're about to play? Where they?
I mean, I thought it was fine. It's not my favorite scene, but I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no. So like, they're slow dancing, and then the music changes to a fast song, and they're in the middle of this kind of talk about their interpersonal lives. And, you know, Jack's really mourning his marriage, and Nancy's kind of questioning the concept of marriage. And then their conversation now is all set to this fast dance scene, and it's very choreographed, and like, it's better to watch it, but I'm going to play it so you can get a little sense of it.
I bet you proposed on the top of a Tuscan hill.
Cephalonian, actually.
Spent about a year planning your big day.
Yeah.
20 grand all in.
Bit more.
And let's not forget about the ring.
Yeah, it was 4 grand. And we had to get it resized because she got awfully thin.
You spent £24,000 on a party and some jewellery.
It was a grand gesture, all right? What's the point of life if you're not up for stuff like that?
I mean, it's a grand gesture that amounted to nothing. Hands, ass.
God, you're such a fucking cynic.
And you're such a fucking romantic.
You know, you put so much emphasis on that one day and you forget about what's the rest of your life.
Okay, what's wrong with having a big day? I mean, look at your parents. I bet they had a party and guests and a wishing tree.
Six guests, local registry office, drinks at the pub afterwards. They decided it was more important to concentrate on the promises they were making.
Well, don't you think that's what I wanted?
What?
When you get married, you make a promise you can't keep, but by God, I was going to try. And I'll never regret that, which is more than you can say, sat up there on your single perch with all your judgments.
They're not judgments, they're theories, very different things.
Whatever.
Oh my God, I love this scene so much. Okay, I'm going to tell you something I just noticed about that I really love about this scene. I love the fact that they're engaged in this argument, but they both quietly agree that they need to sing the song at certain points and just dance too.
Right. Yeah.
Priorities, right?
Yeah. The
priorities.
Well, you know, they're complaining about their differences and whatever, but they're also really in sync about other stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
That's why they're so perfect together.
Yeah, and they have this, like, okay, the choreographed dance was, like, a little bit suspending your disbelief. Like, I actually looked up what after I watched the movie, like, is there a special dance that you do to the reflex by Duran Duran that I was not aware of? And there isn't. They just choreographed it for the movie. But they're, like, doing these choreographed dance moves with each other. And, like, they're, like you said, Sophia, so in sync. And that, like, I love it. I love it so much. And it also reminds me of, like, you know, Jane Austen is the OG of this with, like, Darcy and Elizabeth at, like, the ball having their, like, they're kind of like adversarial conversation while they're doing their dance. It's a great way to have these adversarial conversations in the form of dance, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I like that. It was fun for me. I enjoyed that part.
And that song is awesome. I just want to go to a dance club and dance to it, but it wouldn't be as good as it is in this movie because I don't have someone to dance with who has the whole routine down, right?
Well, you and Lee will do a choreographed beforehand, rehearse, and then go and get it done. And then someone take a video because I want to see that.
I want it to happen like magic, though, Sophia.
I know.
Any other thoughts on this scene for anyone?
It's a fun scene. It's definitely a fun scene.
Yeah. I like that. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, and also their scene in the bathroom together. And did we talk about that?
No, that's not. That's up next, my friend. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You can talk about it, yeah.
So, you know, they have this dance and they're talking about their differences, and she's cynical about marriage and he's like, hey, I wanna, you know, grand gestures and this and that. And then I don't know, remember how it ends, but he runs off to the bathroom.
Yeah, he's starting to get sad. He's starting to get sad. Yeah, he's just starting to get sad remembering about like what he wanted for his marriage. Yeah.
Yeah. And Nancy follows him to comfort him. And we find out more about her relationship history.
Yeah. Sorry, just before we start about that, though. Like, yeah, she follows him. She follows him right into the men's bathroom. Goes into the wrong stall at first. And then finally just sits in the bathroom stall with him. And, like, it looks very clean, thank goodness. Like,
yeah,
cleaner than I would expect. But, like, I have not really liked many scenes set in bathroom stalls. But I like this one. And I was able to not think about it being a toilet.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. It looked cozy. It was this wood paneling,
especially for like a club. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. A cantina or whatever.
Right.
So, but it's sweet. You know, she tells him about that she hasn't had a relationship for 4 years, and before that, she was with the love of her life for 6 years, who left her and quickly met someone else. And I really loved Lake Bell in this scene. I really thought that her vulnerability and her care was their chemistry in it. Everything was really lovely. And like, finally, both of them are like, I don't know, being their truest, realest self. And I thought it was really good.
It's not often you actually are on a first date with a guy, you actually see them cry and you get into like really their the emotional side. And I think in a way, like the only reason like she's able to see him in this position is because he's seen her at her worst, right?
Yeah.
He's seen her lying to somebody and being like, as Sybil kept saying, a psycho, right? So now he can just let it all hang out though. Now he doesn't have to like put up a front to impress her. So that kind of leads to them being closer, which is nice.
Yeah. And honestly, the part where I laughed out loud is after they have this little talk, one guy pops over the top of the stall and then,
oh my God, yes.
And then the other guy, like the two people that were in the stalls next to them, overheard the whole thing and they add their commentary. And I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. They're talking about how they got over their divorces or whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody hurts sometimes. And so now they're getting ready to leave the bar, but something catches on fire and the
boyfriend of her
and they need a firewoman.
Yeah, the boyfriend of his ex-wife catches on fire trying to do a shot. Yeah, and they need a firewoman.
Yes, and the ex-wife looks to Nancy and is like, "You're a firefighter, do something." So Nancy's like, "Oh shit," and she gets a fire extinguisher and gets it all over Jack's ex-wife and her new boyfriend, and it's hilarious.
It was pretty, it was a good moment. I didn't need that moment to be in the movie, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah, why not?
And now we're going to get into our spoiler section. So if you have not seen Man Up, this is the time to get out of here and watch the film. Or if you don't care about spoilers, just keep listening. And yeah, we might spoil you. So there we go. So now Nancy and Jack are coming to a point where like they either have to admit that they're feeling each other or go their separate ways. And Nancy at the station is like getting brave and she is kind of like manning up. Like, not that I love this phrase, but you know, whatever. She's kind of manning up and she's asking Jack to come to her parents' anniversary party. But he doesn't even really hear her, I don't think. He's too distracted by his phone, which he's turned back on. And he's gotten all these messages from Jessica still wanting to meet up with her. And like, instead of just deciding something, Jack asks Nancy, like, or what do you think I should do? Should I meet up with Jessica? And Nancy's like, obviously like frustrated and she feels kind of rejected. And she ends up just saying, oh, you should totally go, you know, whatever. Right. And there's this like super awkward parting and they have no way to contact each other. And like, he kind of kisses her on the cheek. Like it's obviously he still wants to hang out with her. He feels something, but like they go their separate ways anyway. They say idiot, like about themselves, which is kind of like this like little joke they have going. But then when they're by themselves, they also say idiot to themselves. And it's like, oh, it's like one of those moments in a rom-com where you're just like, don't do it. Stop. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do we have, like, I hate these moments, but I also feel like you almost need them to build that tension. What do you guys think?
I think you have to have it to build that tension. I think you're absolutely right. Like, you wish that you could just, like, gloss over that, but if you don't have it, you know that when you finally get to the point where they come together, you're just like, oh, well, who cares?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I feel like Before Sunrise and Before Sunset didn't really have those. I mean, unless you count between movies, right?
Right.
But like, yeah. Yeah, I just, oh, I don't know. Maybe they had those. Yeah, I feel like almost every rom-com has these, but I'm always like, stop. And I'm always like talking to the TV, right?
I know, right? Just say what you feel. Why do you gotta be an idiot like they say? Yeah.
Anyway.
After all that, they wouldn't be like, okay, we've gotta like, let me see you tomorrow, or, you know.
Just get a phone number, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, if you ever want to talk about your divorce, give me a call. You need a firewoman, give me a call. Like, whatever kind of casual way you had to, like, play it off, right? I guess it wouldn't be as dramatic, though. And we wouldn't get to see Sean again. Weren't you guys excited to see Sean again?
No! Oh, my God, no.
No.
So we see, we're gonna see Sean again. Doesn't matter that we're spoiling you here. And while they're leaving each other, I really liked this like piano piece that was playing. It was a cover of the Pixies' Where Is My Mind on piano. Apparently it's by Maxence Serene. And I thought it was a really good mood setter there. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
I didn't. No.
I really liked it. And Nancy gets in the train, and the kicker to this scene is she realizes she still has the wrong notebook. She does not have her parents' anniversary speech. Okay, now we're rounding the end of the movie here. So the last part of the movie keeps cutting between Jack and Nancy. We see Jack and Jessica on her date. What do you guys think about their date?
Oh, man.
I think that they're destined to be together forever.
Well, it's, again, you're just seeing more revealing of Jack being kind of like not knowing what he's doing either. Like, he's trying to regurgitate the whole, he had a conversation planned. He wanted the date to go a certain way.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's so pathetic.
No.
It was
pathetic. Don't think it's pathetic. I think it's his way of dealing with nerves, is he has a certain way he wants to present himself or something, or he has.
But I love that Jessica sees the writing on the wall so quickly. Like, Jessica has her stuff together. Like, she's like, you know what? Yeah.
Actually, but no, she's still really trying to have the date. I don't agree with that. I think like Jessica is being a real tryhard until he actually confesses to her about Nancy. Because like, even when they have nothing in common, she's like, I'm so glad we're both fans of 6 billion people and you. You know what I mean? She's still trying to get enthusiasm going between them. So I disagree with that. I think she's trying.
I think she's just being very positive. But like I think if you look in her eyes, she's like, I can't wait to be gone from here because we are done.
I think if she's really a we are done person, though, she would have efficiently just left. You know what I mean? She'd be like, I'm not feeling this. I'm sorry, Jack. Like, good luck.
I think as we see about Jessica's character, she wants to be right and she wants to win. You know, it's their competitive triathlete-ism where like she wanted Nancy to have that book. And so she gave it to her and left it there, you know? And then she wants this date to work because she read the book and it said, this is how we're going to be a couple. And then when they're going to exchange their, you know, their notebooks, this is when Jack realizes he doesn't have his notebook. He has Nancy's notebook.
Yeah,
and then when he finally, you know, he confesses, I want to go to her, you know, what does she say? She thinks it's romantic, and she wanted to show she was right and Nancy was wrong.
Yeah. She doesn't mind being rejected as long as it proves that she was right about like her theory.
Also, she's a 24-year-old triathlete. So, you know, she's got her whole life ahead of her.
I know. Yeah.
Well, she's got a whole life ahead of her. She's like hot and young and triathletes.
I don't actually find her very hot, but like, yeah, she's young. She's a triathlete. She's successful. Fit. I'm sure she could find somebody else like her own age today.
She is so fit.
But she's just boring to me. I don't know. No offense to the actress, but the way they've made her up and the way they've dressed her and everything, she just feels really boring. I love Nancy's look. I love her whole deal. Like, that's much more my style. So if I saw the two of them in a room, I would gravitate towards Nancy right away. No question.
I mean, I'll be honest with her. She does not seem like a triathlete at all.
No, I know. She looked like a little prim and proper like
not wearing nearly enough athleisure. So
well, she came from her job. She came from her job in the city.
In the city.
Yeah. Yeah. And she doesn't get Jack's Wall Street reference.
That was fantastic. I really appreciated that because it's like you want to get with this 24-year-old dude.
Yeah.
She doesn't get your references and it makes you feel fucking old. And that's the truth when you're hanging out with young people.
Be prepared for like missing. Yeah. If you're going to date somebody that much younger, then you be prepared for a lifetime of this missing everything, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
cultural.
She is not going to dance to the reflex with you.
Yeah. No. Nope. She's going to be like, what's this band? Like,
right.
What is this bar? I want to go to this other posh bar or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, and so while this bad date's going on, we're back at the anniversary party and the dad ends up giving his own speech at the anniversary, which seems like kind of good anyway. Like, it's your anniversary. I don't know. And this is this funny thing where he's like, what's left for us to say to each other after 40 years? And the wife says, take the fucking recycling out.
So fantastic.
I mean,
so British and so true. Yeah.
Obviously, they love each other, right? But mm-hmm. They're not going to be all mushy per se right away. They're going to add some of that humor into it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then he says sweet things too, though. Like, I'm an empty shell on the beach without you. I don't really know what that means 100%, but it's sweet. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. So let's see. Then Nancy arrives at this anniversary party bringing chocolate mousse, but immediately breaks down crying. And this is like her totally being the baby of the family here. Right. Cause like,
yeah,
as an oldest child, I don't think I would ever do this.
Well, baby of the family, and just Nancy's, you know, she's always a mess, right? Like, I don't think she could have come home any other way. And her family loves her, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not like awkward, like, oh, you've ruined it. But they're like, what's the matter, honey? You know, they love her.
Well, anyway, the party kind of stops to deal with Nancy's sadness. And then she kind of tells him the story about what happened, that there was a guy, and then she didn't. Like, it didn't work out. She didn't ask him, or he went off with somebody else, right? So this will lead to our next thing that happens. So Jack is trying to figure out how he's going to find Nancy in the meantime. And he figures out the idea that he has to go find Sean, because Sean knows where Nancy lives, right? So he goes back to the bowling alley, finds Sean. And then Sean drives off in the car, like, driving crazily. And there's a whole weird scene there that I'm not going to go into, right?
With that's Sean a good being thing. There. That's wise, because that whole scene is weird.
It's very weird. But then Sean just you find out Sean ditches him in the wrong place, right? And this is right. So we can have one of those fake doorbell reveal scenes, right? Where the doorbell rings at Nancy's house. You see Jack ringing a doorbell, but who actually shows up at Nancy's house is fucking Sean.
Ah, fucking creeper.
And Nancy's just like too aghast to even say anything, right? Like, she's just like
catatonic. Just be honest, Sean, for reals, yo, like, why do you think this is going to work out for you?
Because he's so delusional, I think, right?
Oh, God.
That's the only explanation for it, that he's that delusional.
Yeah.
Like, yes, as he comes into the house, like, do you notice the part where he grabs somebody else's ice cream and starts eating it?
Yes.
No, I didn't notice that part. I noticed him trying to, like, feed her, and she's just sitting there, and he's, like, putting it all over. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, he's pushing a spoon of chocolate mousse at her face, and it just, like she won't open her mouth, and it just lands on her face.
Which is funny, but also, like, you know, he's going to kill her and leave this decomposing body on the bed and, like, be feeding it and be like, isn't this yummy, Nancy? And
I don't think he's a killer.
Is the difference between Jennifer and me. I believe that Sean is completely crazy.
I think he's crazy, but I don't think he's a killer. I think you can be crazy.
I think he
could be crazy and not be a killer. Okay. Like, you could just be so delusional, just follow someone, but not kill them. I think they're two types.
He's like, he's a benign kind of crazy.
I'm not saying he's benign. No, I think he's terrible. And he's like taking pictures in her window and shit. And that's terrible. Right. But like, I just don't see him as like getting satisfaction out of her being dead. I think he wants a live person to interact with. This has gone really dark.
Keep her chained to her bed.
Chained to the bed.
I could maybe see that.
The lotion on the skin. Okay.
No, that guy is a killer though. And he, never mind. More like, we're thinking more like the Lady in Misery at this point, right? Like, she needs him alive, right?
Okay, okay, all right, yeah.
All right, we're here. We have found the land. We have found the land, okay.
In the meantime, it's supposed to be funny.
In the meantime, mental illness, hysterical. So funny.
Well, okay, so the other side of the doorbell, though, Jack has ended up at this, which is funny. This part is funny. Jack has ended up at this teenager's, like, wild party. They're all drinking. And, like, he's like, is Nancy here? At least hoping that Nancy will be there. And then he quickly realizes Nancy is not there. But all the girls are like, I'm Nancy. I'm Nancy. And then all the kids are like, I'm Nancy. And he's like, no, 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 you're not Nancy.
Yeah, because he's at this teen. He's at this teen, like, rager. He's at this teen rager.
And it's hilarious. It's so cute. He's like, this is horrible. There's a girl vomiting in the sink. And he, like, pulls her hair back.
Yeah.
Simon Pegg with those teenagers was so funny. I don't know why. It just was. And finally, the one kid's like, Nancy Patterson, she was my babysitter. And he's like, can you take her to me? And he's like, yes, I can.
That was cute.
And then this, like,
and then they all go. Yeah, they all go.
Right. And they all go.
Yeah, this whole party of teenagers, like, running through this British suburb together, like, in a pack, was just glorious. I love this in the movie.
Me too.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Was this anyone's favorite scene or one of their favorites?
I actually loved this, and because the soundtrack is really good, I also love the fact that this teen, this is very teenager. He's like, of course I can. I have no idea where I'm going. I know. Because they're like, they're just like drunk teenagers, like, rampaging. It was hysterical.
Yeah, yeah. And then the song you mentioned, they were playing Here I Go Again by Whitesnake. So they had their hair metal moment in the movie. Yeah. Okay, and then Nancy, meanwhile, is back at the anniversary party. She's giving a speech, which is mostly about her day and what she did. And then it all kind of winds up with, like, a tenuous tie to her parents. Like, I saw a glimmer of hope if I could have what these two have, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So not a very good speech in the end.
No.
But, I mean, it's a rom-com and it's about them, so I guess that's what it is. And then, like, suddenly Jack shows up at the window with the teenagers, kind of does a somersault in through the window into the party.
Which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was so funny and cute.
And, like, the somersault or just the showing up with the teenagers?
Showing up with the teenagers and then the somersault in, like an action hero coming in at the end or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're so not, you just somersaulted through a window.
It is like an action hero too. You're right. Because you're wanting him to come and rescue Nancy from fucking Sean, who's putting the chocolate mousse at her face. Yeah. You're
like,
somebody snap her the fuck out of this. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And so this is going to be now Jack's grand gesture speech. So I'm going to play a clip of Jack's speech to Nancy.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. And friends and members of Nancy's family who I've never met before in my life. I met a girl today. The wrong girl. Except she turned out to be the right girl. And this girl, who took a chance on me in the most bizarre and romantic way possible, wanted me to take a chance on her. But I didn't, you know, I didn't. I blew it like a stupid 40-year-old midlife crisis dickhead that I am. Which is why I sought help from old Bose. Yeah, you're not the most reliable of sources, really. Yeah, whatever. But undeterred, I commandeered these brilliant young drunks because nothing was going to stop me from finding this girl and telling her what I should have told her earlier on. Nancy, I am so bloody glad you pretended to be my date today, because if you hadn't, then I never would have heard any of your amazing sex theories, or watched you trying to get jalapeno out of your teeth, or witnessed your very instinctive firewoman skills. I would never have got to know that muddy, beautiful triathlete face, or witnessed that awesome, highly competitive ass as you're about to get another strike. In fact, if you hadn't pretended to be my date today, my day would have been utterly rubbish. And so quite possibly would have been the rest of my life. Don't make those noises, I'm right on the edge. Nancy, you said I was an emotional jigsaw and that I should look for the blue bits. Well, I think you might be the blue bits, Nancy. So what do you say? Quid pro quo?
I like that.
Me too.
This is a good speech.
Mm-hmm.
Really ties together a lot of things that you saw in the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously designed to do that. And it's obviously one of those designed grand gesture speeches. Like, it doesn't really feel per se naturalistic, but it works for me.
Right.
Yeah.
And Simon Pegg is good in rom-coms. Like, yeah, like Shaun of the Dead was a rom-com. Like,
it is. It
and Run, Fat Boy, Run, he's good in that, even though it's not as well written. Like, I don't know if he's done too many others. He was in a terrible one called How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. Just don't fucking watch that shit. It's like, just don't. Just don't. Okay. There's very few movies I'll say that about, but I just don't see a possibility of anybody enjoying that film. So, but yeah, I think he's good in romantic roles if they are written well. So yeah, they do the speech, they kiss, like there's like they go to make out in the bathroom, which okay, isn't this like her childhood home? Why wouldn't she just go to the bedroom? Because like there's a lot of people at this party.
They like bathrooms.
Bathrooms. It's the third bathroom.
That's their thing, yeah.
That's right. It is the third bathroom. You guys okay, right. You guys are on to something here. Because it made no sense to me. I'm like, you're at a party, dude. People need to use this bathroom. Go upstairs. But like, you're right. Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. The one thing that I don't like about the end of this is like Sean goes to listen at the door and like Nancy's like, I'll send pictures. And like, no.
Yeah, that was gross.
No.
I know.
Don't encourage him.
I know.
Yeah. And then Sean leaves the party and he's like smelling this scarf, but it's actually like the dude's scarf. It's Jack's scarf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the sweet thing about the end of the party is everybody's happy. Like Nancy and Jack are happy. Sean seems happy for some reason. People at the party are happy, the family's happy, and all the teenagers are happy, and they're kind of the last thing you see are the teenagers kind of partying outside.
Mm-hmm.
I really got attached to those teenagers in a short amount of time.
Totally.
Yeah, any final thoughts about the movie then as a whole?
I mean, I enjoyed it. I can see why you watch it in the background a lot. It's like it moves along in an okay clip. It has good character development and it's like fun.
I'd recommend it. I tell people, go watch that one. It's fun.
So now that we're done with the movie, we'll go on to our double feature recommendations. And let's do them like just all of ours at once, if that would be okay with everybody. Yeah.
Perfect.
So I have two double feature recommendations today, and they're both Lake Bell movies. So my first double feature recommendation would be to watch In a World from 2013. And as we mentioned, that's the movie that Lake Bell wrote, directed, and acted in. It's about a young female voice actor who's trying to break into better jobs. And her father is like this legendary voice actor in the movie. So it has like some things about her career and like sexism in the industry. And it's also got things about her like kind of strained relationship with her father. And there's also a rom-com element in it. There are a ton of comic actors in it that you'll recognize, like Rob Corddry, like Tig Notaro. It's got Nick Offerman. It's got Ken Marino from like the Wet Hot American Summer People. It's just got a ton of recognizable comic actors who are like all really giving their A game. So yeah, like nothing I don't recommend about this movie, especially it really talks about feminism in film, you know, like how hard it can be for women to break into areas where they haven't been before. So I think a lot of our listeners would respond to it that way.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay. And then my other recommendation, it's not as good of a movie. Okay. But it is Lake Bell in another rom-com. And I don't know, maybe you've seen this one, Sybil, because it has Paul Rudd is her love interest. And it's called Over Her Dead Body from 2008.
I haven't seen this one.
There's a Paul Rudd rom-com you haven't seen.
That's why I said, when I looked this one up, I'm like, I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, isn't that? Yeah. Well, okay. So it's not great. Okay. But it's like, I do think Lake Bell is good in it. She plays another kind of relatable female character, and she also has to lie to the male character in a less egregious way. There's a much more understandable reason why she's lying in this movie. It's basically about this guy whose fiance died on the day of their wedding, and the fiance is played by Eva Longoria, and the guy's sister really wants him to like kind of get over the death finally, because it's been a while. So she wants him to go to Lake Bell, who's a psychic. And she tells Lake Bell to kind of just make something up that you heard from the fiance. And she says it's okay to move on, right? And so Lake Bell kind of gets roped into doing this against her will. Then she kind of starts falling for Paul Rudd. But then as soon as she starts falling for Paul Rudd, like for Eva Longoria's ghost comes back and starts like harassing them because she doesn't want her fiance to move on. So it's like a whole weird contrived situation, but it's kind of fun. And like, I think Lake Bell is good in it. And Paul Rudd is always good. Okay, there's a scene with Paul Rudd and a fucking parrot that like Sybil, you will die.
If anybody can sell that, it'll be Paul Rudd.
Yeah. Like when I was watching it, Lee and I were watching it, we're like, he can really do anything. He can really make anything work. Like,
he really can. He is a very underrated actor.
But Lake Bell really sells it too. Okay. So like there's some weird writing in this movie, but it somehow like sustains. So yeah. Over Her Dead Body, 2008.
All right. Cool. I'm going to see if I can find it somewhere.
I found it at the library, just for the record.
There you go. We love the library. Shout out to the library. All right. I've got my two. So my first is Already Tomorrow in Hong Kong, which is a 2015 film. And I think that this has some kind of the same kind of feel where it's kind of like finding and meeting somebody by happenstance. So I really enjoyed this film. I think it's really well done, and it's Asian Americans. So, you know, go watch that.
I think didn't you recommend that one, Sophia? Sunrise or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. So we've had two people who think that this is a good film for different reasons. Always a good time.
Yeah.
This one. And then my other one is Shaun of the Dead from 2004. And this is essentially, Simon Pegg in a kind of zombie rom-com. And I really, really enjoy it. It's one of my favorite Simon Pegg films, period.
Yeah, I mean, this is a classic film. Like, if somebody hasn't seen Shaun of the Dead, you need to go out and see it. Even if you don't like zombie films, it's, like, really not that scary. It's not really gross.
Yeah, I don't like zombie films, and it's not scary. It's very funny, and it's making fun of zombie films.
Yeah, like, there's a scene where they're, like, throwing record albums at the zombies to try to kill them because they don't have any weapons that are better. It's hilarious. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a very fun film, and there's a scene where, like, one of my favorites is when they walk by – they're like walking along and they see their own team from different people walking by.
Yeah, they see a similar zombie fighting team, just like everybody, the same types are in the team.
The same tropes are walking by.
And you've also got Bill Nye and shows up in that movie too.
Bill Nye is genius.
Yeah, some great actors in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, love it's just movie. A really good film. It's just an incredibly good film. So.
Yeah, we'll get around to covering that eventually, I hope. So, yeah.
I recommend Sliding Doors from 1998. I know we're going back here. It stars Gwyneth Paltrow, kind of at the height of her career there. We like it a lot. It's, you know, this idea of like parallel universes, but in a rom-com-y kind of way. And so you're following, you know, the Gwyneth Paltrow character's life, if she got on the train or if she didn't, and what happens in there. But mostly I recommend it for as like a double feature for this film because of the London-ness about it. And I, you know, love all that feel of it. And in fact, you see the same bridge is featured in Sliding Doors and in Man Up here. My other double feature is No Strings Attached from 2011. As we mentioned before, Lake Bell, she's not the main characters. She has a smaller part. I like this film.
I do too.
And her character in it is, she's really funny because she's this, like, she works on the film set of Ashton Kutcher's character, and she's kind of got a crush on him. And she's really, she talk about awkward, like they go to like spend the weekend together, whatever. And she brings like her printer with her to like, I just thought that was hilarious. She's on this date with this guy she's got a crush on. And she brought her like work computer and printer with her to maybe do some. She does it flawlessly. She does it great. So if you want to see some more of Lake Bell.
Yeah. Yeah. I like No Strings Attached. I will say I like Friends with Benefits, which is like the same movie better.
Yeah.
But like, yeah.
Okay. Like we need to do those because of parallel stories and
There's just so many movies we need to do. Like, I know. Like an endless supply, essentially. I know. Yeah. So yeah. So there we go. I'm so glad that Sybil and Sophia, that you were able to come together again here and like, yeah, me we too. Could have this energy. I hope it won't be another year before it happens again. Like,
agreed.
I agree.
Let's do some musicals together. Let's sing. Let's dance. Let's, yeah. Okay. Cause like,
all the musicals.
Yeah. Because, so what we have coming up for, sorry, audience, what we have coming up for every rom com, we have two more in the self help series. He's Just Not That Into You. And then Think Like a Man. And then after that, we are going straight into musicals. We're going to have some of our favorite musicals from each of us. So you'll get a little bit of different vibes going on. So, and yeah, stay tuned for that. And as always, send us feedback at feedback@everyromcom.com. And be sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe to us. Like, we don't want you to miss the new episodes when they come out. And yeah, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye, guys.